Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. After the violent murder of George Floyd by a Minnesota police officer in 2020, companies across the country vowed to establish or bolster diversity, equity, and inclusion teams in their workforces. The number of DEI jobs doubled across the country. 3 years later, it's a different story. More than a third of those jobs have disappeared, according to a new report from Revelio Labs, which studies workforce trends. Rehan Ayas is a senior economist with Revelio Labs, where she leads the economics team. Rehan, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You bet. The protests following the murder of George Floyd in 2020 saw companies kind of rushing to make their workplaces more diverse, putting diversity, equity, and inclusion teams in place. And now that they're being let go in high numbers, was this just window dressing, a performance, or what do you make of it?
So our earlier research suggested that not only after the murder of George Floyd, but also right after previous Black Lives Matter protests, there was a surge in hiring rates for ESG roles and DEI roles in companies. And for companies, it really is an important public relations slash marketing effort. When there is less of media attention, less of public attention on the issue, they tend to increase hiring rates and put that in the spotlight of their commitments to DEI. But unfortunately, as time passes by and public attention is not that laser focused on these issues, we see that those promises are typically not kept.
I mean, 3 years is a really short time. I would imagine that a solid DEI program, it would take a lot longer than that just to really make a dent in that workforce.
That is true, especially when we look at the stock of workforce or the people, the diversity of people working at these companies. Just as you mentioned, 3 years is not that long a horizon to make a change in that. But the things have changed, the economic environment and the feeling, especially in tech companies who are experiencing layoffs in the past year. I think the focus and the attitudes have shifted quite a lot in the last 3 years.
Let's dig into some of the numbers you found. One third of the DEI positions are gone. How many are we talking about in raw numbers?
What we found was the attrition rates for DEI roles at companies that experienced layoffs in year 2022 were almost double those of all other employees at these companies. And that basically means DEI roles are being replaced faster than all the other roles. And another interesting thing we found was for most of these companies, number of outflows from DEI teams were substantial enough numbers that would basically warrant an exodus of an entire team. So median DEI team size is about 3 people at these companies. And we found that about 4 to 15, 16 DEI officers left these companies, which again is essentially disappearance of entire teams.
And when we're talking about a 3-person DEI team, how big of a company are we talking about? What does that mean?
We are mostly looking at any company that did layoffs. So in the study, we wanted to focus on the impact of layoffs and how that affected the culture around DEI and hiring around DEI at these companies. So we looked at, we didn't restrict by company size, so it can vary, but any company that has to file a WARN notice. So you might have heard about the WARN notices. Any company with more than 100 employees has to file a public notice with the state if they're laying off a certain section of their workforce. And these are the companies we're looking at. So these are not tiny companies.
The companies that had a lot of turnover slash losses in their DEI forces, was there a correlation between that and the a number of people employed who fall into a DEI category? People of color, yeah, women, yeah.
That's an excellent question. And I feel like it's a bit too early to answer that question very neatly. And the reason for that is obviously having a DEI officer has longer term impacts on the workforces of these companies. But retrospectively looking, we wanted to see what kind of changes we might expect like what kind of impacts do DEI officers have on these companies? And there were two key results that we found. One of them was companies with DEI teams compared to those that don't have such initiatives tend to have slightly more diverse new hires. So again, as we were talking, it is not that easy to change the entire workforce of a company, but we can make a dent in that by changing hiring policies. So when we looked at hiring the new incoming workforce at these companies, we found that they were slightly more diverse, more representation by people of color. And another thing we found was that companies that have DEI teams have higher employee satisfaction. We use employee reviews of these companies, and we found that not only were these companies rated better in terms of their culture and values and diversity and inclusion ratings, but they also had overall ratings that were higher than companies that do not have DEI teams.
And that's true with a lot of different kinds of studies that's, you know, when it comes to DEI, but I've read that a lot of DEI teams were put into place without much authority or resources.
Yeah, that is an excellent question. I think there is this understanding that a lot of DEI officers are essentially set up to fail, as in they're not given enough resources or enough bandwidth to really deal with the large issues that they're tasked to deal with. And I think one of the important understandings here is the nuance in the data. So when we look at these set of companies, we do see that there are differences, but they are small and they are perhaps not at the place that we would like them to be. And there's definitely other evidence out there, like other industries, where we can see that DEI officers not getting to do the impact that they were expected to do. So yes, there's definitely an understanding here that most DEI officers, unfortunately, are set up to fail by these companies to begin with.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about how companies around the country back in 2020 vowed to establish or bolster diversity, equity, and inclusion teams in their workforce. And the number of DEI jobs doubled across the country. But 3 years later, more than a third of those jobs have disappeared. That's according to a new report from Revelio Labs, which studies workforce trends. And I'm talking right now with senior economist from Revelio, Rehan Ayaz. If you have a question or comment this hour, want to talk about the value of DEI, or not, there's different points of view on this. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, the question of whether DEI actually works is a question you can't ask in a vacuum. I mean, you have to ask whether it's also properly resourced and given the authority to do the job of diversifying the workforce, right?
Absolutely. I feel like hiring DEI officers for the sake of hiring DEI officers is essentially falling into that category of, you know, public relations or marketing efforts by the companies, where you can make big statements out there. Well, we hired this many DEI officers. That's a great statement for a company to make in summer 2020. And that is definitely something that they have worked with. But the real question lies in whether these DEI officers were given the teams and resources that they need to tackle with the issues that they're tasked with, and more importantly, whether the company actually makes it a priority to deal with those issues.
So yeah, making it, you know, going to a DEI meeting, in other words, is mandatory. It's not a choice by the employees, that kind of a thing.
Or I am not only like DEI trainings by employees, but whether the management is committed to making changes that would result in better diversity outcomes for the company.
You found that the majority of chief DEI officers were white. What, I mean, what's going on with that?
Where did we find that?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Did you keep track of the color or the background of the DEI officers and who they were? Were they necessarily even qualified to do what they were doing?
We haven't directly done a study on diversity officers, but we have done direct studies on similar roles to this that companies have established. For example, chief green officers who are tasked with making company policies on the environment more progressive, for example. And over there, we had found that a lot of these chief green officers did not really come from a background of environmental science or any environmental impact, but rather had backgrounds in marketing or public relations or business. And that gave us a clue in terms of like the kinds of roles that were assigned to these chief green officers. Definitely a really interesting question. I think my preliminary analysis suggests that for chief diversity officers, the majority of them are not white, so companies do tend to have a more diverse workforce when it comes to their diversity officers. That being said, looking into their backgrounds, into whether they come from educational or professional backgrounds that would support them in this new role is a key question, definitely.
Mark in Grove City, you're on the air. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Anna. So I'm calling because I'm a nonprofit professional, and I'm Black, and I tend to run into a lot of issues when it comes to just working in the community or working with other people internally, whether at my organization or other organizations. And usually when these issues of racism pop up, I am looked at for answers and for, what direction do you want us to take this in? What do you want us to do? And I'm not the only one. I see that in a lot of different companies and organizations. And I feel like a lot of these places are going, almost putting people in a bad position where they have to solve racism themselves in the workplace, as opposed to hiring a DEI consultant or a DEI staff member to do those types of things. Mm-hmm. And I was just curious about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, that's a good question. Thanks, Mark. Rayhan, Ayas. Like kind of by de facto DEI.
Yeah. So Mark's experience, I think, resonates with a lot of people who work at companies where there's no DEI presence or officer or anyone who actually takes on and makes that their business. A lot of companies do rely on kind of side labor by people of color, of women, to have to change things that needs to be changed. And I think that really speaks volumes, because that is what is really generating the result of companies with DEI teams having better employee satisfaction. Obviously, employees who don't have to take on that extra labor are happier with their companies. They can see more change. And that is really what is driving those results of employee satisfaction.
What are the next set of questions that you're asking in this line of research you're doing, Rayhan?
Excellent question. I think one thing that we really need to look into is the longer term outcomes of this current trends. I don't think we will see the immediate impact. We will see the full impacts of this reversal of trends now, but a few years down the line, I think that's when we'll have a more complete picture of how these DEI layoffs and DEI attrition will impact companies' workforces, and how that will impact people of color who work at these companies, how they feel about working there, and how has, hiring and attrition changed for employees in general in these companies. So that's definitely something on the horizon.
And just going back to the caller real quick before I let you go, I'm just wondering how many people are, how much is this trend going to signal to universities, places where people are trained as DEI, in the DEI way, that there's not as much of a demand for it as they had thought? I mean, what do you think that their people are being properly trained in the first place?
That's a great question. I don't think we have college degrees that are directly related to DEI roles in companies. I know some business schools are now implementing certain DEI trainings into the curriculum, but that being said, I don't think there are any direct schools or majors that you can take on to prepare to take on a DEI role at a company. And moving forward, I feel like there will be it's there might be less demand for these roles, but it's really too early to say it if it is here to stay or whether it will reverse after a while.
Rehan Ayas is senior economist with Revelio Labs, where she leads the economics team. They just wrapped up a project that showed that although the number of DEI jobs doubled across the country in 2020, 3 years later, a third of those jobs have disappeared. That's according to the report from Revelio. Thanks so much for your time today, Rehan. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, and have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, you too. We have more to come, so stay with us. And if you have a question or comment about this issue of DEI, whether it works, whether it doesn't, if you think it's important, if the spirit of it is important or not, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Chip Brantley, co-host of the NPR podcast White Lies. Before we found the man in Vancouver, before we sued the State Department, before we snuck into the graveyard of a federal penitentiary, all we had were the photographs. Photographs of a group of Cuban men standing on the roof of a prison in rural Alabama. That's this season on the NPR podcast White Lies.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. After the violent murder of George Floyd by a Minnesota police officer in 2020, companies across the country vowed to establish or bolster diversity, equity, and inclusion teams in their workforce. The number of DEI jobs doubled across the country, but 3 years later, it's a different story. More than a third of those jobs have disappeared, according to a new report from Revelio Labs, which studies workforce trends. Nika White is an author, entrepreneur, and founder of Nika White Consulting, a diversity, equity, and inclusion consulting firm in Greenville, South Carolina. Her 2023 book is titled Inclusion Uncomplicated, a transformative guide to simplify DEI. Welcome to the show, Nika White.
Thanks so much, Ann. I appreciate you having me.
What was it about the global push of Black Lives Matter in 2020 that inspired corporate America to increase DEI jobs within their companies?
I think people realized that what was happening outside of the four walls of their organizations was definitely impacting how in which their employees, particularly employees of color, Black employees, were showing up to the workplace. And they realized that they no longer could sit on the sidelines and not give attention to that. And so many organizations began to take the stance and the position of, while we're not maybe directly in the lane and the space of social justice, we do have to make sure that our colleagues feel well supported and to demonstrate our commitment towards them being able to thrive and compete effectively and to grow and show up at their best within the workplace in order to yield the performance outcomes that they were seeking.
And so what do you make out of the fact that one third of the positions have been phased out through attrition or otherwise since?
Yeah, and it's very disheartening. I believe that so many of us who are in this space and this work, and we care deeply about equity and inclusion and justice, we saw that the murder of George Floyd, while very tragic and horrific, it was very visible. And of course, you know, so many had a front row seat to seeing that unfold. And out of that, the silver lining was, now here's an opportunity. You know, will we rise to the occasion and then begin to take more notice in an intentional fashion of what we need to do at the individual levels, at the organizational levels, the systems level, to be able to create better equity and to address the systemic racism that was occurring? And so there was a groundswell of support around that, and it resulted in many organizations demonstrating their commitment by bringing on talent that could help lead this work, facilitate this work in a really effective way. And we have now since seen that many of those organizations, you know, we can't really question what the intent was, but we know that the outcomes have not landed in a place that we all feel great about. And that is really disheartening. And it causes us to question if, you know, some of those initial reactions in response to the death and murder of George Floyd were more performative in nature, or if there's something else that we just have not been able to put our hands on that's causing these organizations to not have the endurance around staying committed to what they had, what they stated back at that time.
How much is that a function of who was made DEI, the chief officer or whatever, in the first place? I understand that most of the chief diversity officers in these companies were white. They didn't Yes. necessarily have, you know, a horse in the race, sort of. I don't know.
Yes, in fact, and the latest reports and stats show that the percentage of individuals that were comprised of chief diversity officers were 76% that were white. And that's alarming. It's alarming because when the motivation was a result, again, of this, you know, horrific situation of the murder of George Floyd, when racism was centered as part of those conversations, you would think that there's greater gravity to bringing on individuals to serve in that capacity that definitely had the lived experience and the strategic prowess to be able to address some of those inequities that were really existing across so many different organizations. And I'll also share that not only are 76% of those individuals in those chief diversity officer roles white, but when you think about the percentage of Black professionals, it is 3.8%. And what I'm coming to understand is that a lot of those individuals that have lost their jobs because of budget cuts, you know, the headwinds of the economics, many of those individuals have been part of that 3.8%, you know, the Black professionals that were leading the DEI roles in these organizations. So again, it's very disheartening.
Let's see, let's turn to Mia in Montgomery County. Hi, Mia, you're on the air.
How are you doing today?
Good, thanks. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, Mia.
So I believe that the intent, like you said, the intent was good, but we have to go back to who was measuring. I think people wanted to be known as that company or that individual that was fulfilling DEI, but what were the checkpoints? You know, it's like all of a sudden companies are turning on a dime to be diverse, inclusive, and have equity. And so rather than making it woven into the fabric of who they are, I think they were rewarded for checking the box. And all with good intentions to say, hey, we're up to speed, we're in on this, we're doing it. The challenge comes when people who are fulfilling these roles only have one lane of experience. And when you think of diversity, inclusion, and equity, it's the whole person, rather than just one instance. So you can go into it with your passion for gender or race or culture, and then have a timeline that says, okay, these other issues are extremely important and need to be woven in as well. And then I also think the financial aspect always has an impact.
What do you mean by that?
I think it's very challenging for companies to keep their eye on finance and stewardship of its people. I think they have to dig deeper and say, how were we treating our people before any of this started? What did we change? And is that change still being supported, strengthened, and heightened to move forward?
Okay. Yeah, Nika White, what do you think?
Yeah, Mia, thank you so much for your comments and your contribution to this discussion. So much of what you said resonates with me. I want to pick out just a few points, though, to react to. The first is, as you stated, and I think I also amplify this, you know, the intentions, I believe, for many organizations were pure. But, you know, we talk a lot in this work of equity and inclusion about intent versus impact. Mm-hmm. And even though the intent may not have been to create harm, there is still an impact there. And that impact has to be owned. And I think part of the disheartening nature of what's occurring right now is that we aren't seeing these organizations, you know, pivoting to try to address that maybe our intent was right, but the output did not lead us to an impact that's aligning with the intent. And so now what do we do about it? We're actually seeing the opposite. We're seeing that these roles are being eliminated, or even the roles that may remain, they are really challenged in that perhaps they're not well-resourced. I hear that a lot from chief diversity officers. Perhaps they're not well-supported by leadership in terms of the full body of work falls directly on their shoulders. And this is not work that belongs to one individual person. The other thing I want to just comment on is the race factor. And I bring this up because this is a conversation that tends to always find its way into these topics, which is diversity is more than just race. It is broad. And that is correct. Diversity is a point of respect in which things differ. There's so many different dimensions of diversity. But the way this conversation started today was around the stats and the groundswell of support for the work of equity and inclusion as a result of systemic racism issues that were brought to head because of the murder of George Floyd. And so I bring that to light because, yes, we are, as practitioners, have to make sure that we are valuing the breadth and the reach of diversity, but we have to make sure we are centering this racism piece. If we can't fix that, we're not going to be able to fix anything else. And that is really the essence of how this work of diversity and inclusion first started in the first place. And so I think just making sure we're getting back to the root and we are centering the most marginalized in our efforts is something that is really critical.
Mia, thank you so much for that call. 614-292-8513 if you want to join the conversation. You know, I'm kind of interested in your thoughts, Nika. The Ohio General Assembly is looking at legislation that targets diversity mandates and would end diversity, equity, and inclusion mandates at publicly funded universities and colleges in Ohio. And I'm wondering, you know, what your thoughts are about going after that part of the equation at this point.
It's another one of those you know, situations that's gaining a lot of speed. It's not just Ohio. I've heard similar situations in other states. Right. And I am very much against it. I believe that it is creating a distraction. And, you know, sometimes, Anne, as I sit back and I listen to some of the criticism that comes forth around DEI, a lot of that resistance is a lack of clarity. I don't think that those lawmakers, those influencers who are really trying to gain speed around such an idea of taking away the focus of DEI as part of these institutions is nonsensical to me. We live in a society to where, honestly, the global majority are people of color. And so we have to make sure that we are preparing ourselves for that, that we're thinking intently about that, and that we are gathering the data to understand where those disparities exist and doing something about it. I am really big on evidence-based data, gathering the facts in order to be able to have the narrative to fully be told, and then letting that intel lead us to informed decisions. And I don't think that that's really top of mind right now in those conversations where such decisions are being encouraged.
What does for the sake of clarity, what does DEI done right look like for a company?
There's a multitude of ways in which to define success in DEI. And the first thing that I will say is it's not a very specific destination. It is about continuing to move the needle. And once you've been able to gain traction and momentum around certain areas, then you catapult yourself to the next level. So it's first and foremost being committed to the full process of the journey with great level of endurance, because this work does not really seed itself in results and outcomes overnight. So that commitment is key. It also means that we're looking at systems, policies, procedures, and culture, and we aren't just trying to solve for DEI in a very performative way. Through activity. I talk a lot about the key difference between activity versus impact. Activity can be very performative. You know, activity has a start and an end date. But if we think about impact, that's where change management comes in. That's where we really are looking deep at the systems, and we're peeling back all the layers to identifying those root causes. It's also where we are compelled to lean into the importance of accountability. We have to make sure that accountability is a part of the measurement if we are to really see some results that can be sustained for the long haul.
And, you know, we see correlations, at least, between DEI and workplace morale, high workplace morale or higher than average workplace morale. I don't know if it's a causation or not, but there are clearly correlations of that. Why do you think that is, or do you think that it's part of it, not just a correlation?
No, it is absolutely a part of it. And, you know, the best way to talk about that, Anne, is really just to think about how each of us, we want to be able to show up to environments at our best. And it's hard to do that if we're always questioning whether or not we belong. Do we belong here? Do we have full opportunity for success? Are we safe? And if we're questioning those things, then of course our morale is going to be compromised and suffer. And when that happens, we're not showing up at our best, which means that organizationally, our teams, our departments, the whole entire organization is not really optimizing its output. The other thing that's important to realize about this is that this is not a zero-sum game, as Angela Glover has stated so many times. When one body of individuals or population that belong to a certain identity are able to thrive in a workplace and feel that sense of inclusion and belongingness, then everyone else around them who they're collaborating with, who they are you know, being relied upon to execute their task and their responsibilities, they're going to benefit as well. And so the organization benefits. So while I think that it is important sometimes, based upon the audience that may be a part of the conversation, to bring the business imperative to it, you know, that certainly can drive the motivation sometimes, because people are very much looking for, okay, what is the business case for it? What is the business case? Mm-hmm. I do want to amplify that while that's critical and that's important, particularly for the audience that may be a part of the conversation, equally important is just centering on the humanity aspect of it, because that humanity aspect is what also correlates to that morale piece that, you know, was part of your question.
And morale equals longer term employment, more stability, yes. The whole kit and caboodle on that
absolutely.
Score.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Nika White is an author, entrepreneur, and founder of Nika White Consulting, a diversity, equity, and inclusion firm in Greenville, South Carolina. And her 2023 book is titled Inclusion Uncomplicated, A Transformative Guide to Simplify DEI. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Chip Brantley, co-host of the NPR podcast White Lies. Before we found the man in Vancouver, before we sued the State Department, before we snuck into the graveyard of a federal penitentiary, all we had were the photographs photographs of a group of Cuban men standing on the roof of a prison in rural Alabama. That's this season on the NPR podcast, White Lies.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the layoffs of people in the diversity, equity, and inclusion departments of some of the country's top companies. There was a big push to establish or bolster DEI departments and companies after the murder of George Floyd in 2020. 3 years later, there was a big drop off by about a third. With the exodus of DEI representatives from the workplace, some people wonder if they were around long enough to have an impact at all. Still with us is Nika White, founder of Nika White Consulting, a diversity, equity, and inclusion consulting firm in Greenville, South Carolina. Her 2023 book is titled Inclusion Uncomplicated, a transformative guide to simplify DEI. Tanya Menon is a professor of human resource management in the Fisher College of Business at Ohio State. She's also chair of the OSU Faculty Senate Diversity Committee. Welcome to the show, Tanya Menon.
Thank you so much, Anne.
So you look at and question the ultimate effectiveness of DEI. So maybe let's start with what the factors are of DEI that you study.
Yeah, I don't think I question the effectiveness of DEI itself. I'm all for all of the goals, but I am very concerned about interventions that are used very quickly without much kind of assessment of impact. So I'm much more focused on what are the metrics and are we actually measuring what we're saying that these are supposed to do.
Can you give me an example of what you mean by those interventions used very quickly?
Yeah, I don't think it is something that is exclusive to DEI. So all kinds of problems are out there in the world, and people are desperately looking for solutions. And one of my favorite examples has nothing to do with DEI. It is active shooter drills. Hmm. And so we have children who are going through active shooter drills. Money is being spent on these drills where kids are throwing pencils to stop someone with a machine gun walking into the room. And who has studied whether these are effective or not? And so an example that I have written about is the implicit bias research, and a lot of people have written about it, which is it is something that really resonated with people, and it's amazing psychological research. And so the question is not really about the research itself, but was it really ready for prime time and trying to achieve the things that it was supposed to achieve? And so we're spending billions of dollars on trainings, on interventions. Do these actually work? And I consider this a life and death issue, just like the issue of active shooters, which is these are being used in all kinds of corporations where police departments, they're used in corporations where people are, their lives, their careers, their sense of meaning, as the previous speaker said, is relying on these kinds of tools. And so I want to know what are the actual effects and why are we investing if we don't have really clear results on impact?
So the idea of DEI, you're all for it.
Absolutely.
The question is, how well do we understand it? And, you know, Nika White, I wanted to go to you and turn to you on the title of your book, because I think that says something about what Tanya's talking about, that what do we really know? And you talk about Inclusion Uncomplicated, a transformative guide to simplify DEI. You had to start with a definition, or at least, I guess, what the goals are, and then how do you achieve those goals, right, Nika?
Absolutely. And what I'll share, Anne, is that the impetus for Inclusion Uncomplicated was to help demystify the constructs of DEI. I definitely agree with Tanya in that there's a lot of unlearning that has to occur around just these topics and these words that we hear quite often. And so we have to make sure that we're helping people to unlearn the misinformation. I find that the reason so many people may find themselves resistant to the work of DEI, it's not because at their core, they really don't believe in the value of it, but it's because they see it as maybe the responsibility of someone else, and it feels maybe too daunting and too complex to where they are on the sidelines. And so part of my goal with writing Inclusion Uncomplicated was to help bring that to the fore and to provide a way for people to not see it as complex, which could hopefully help to disarm some folks who very well could be great influencers if they were to get over that fear mindset. I'll also share in response to Tanya's commentary that the great thing about diversity, equity, and inclusion and belonging, all of those terms, is that it is horizontal. It's not vertical. And so it certainly has to be embedded into every aspect of an organization. So part of what I talk about in the book is the significance of that mindset shift, right? Right now, sometimes we see it as a program or initiative. And if the person who carries the title of Chief Diversity Officer happens to transition or get laid off, like we're seeing right now in many organizations, then the work goes with it. But if the organization has already bought into this mindset that it is a part of our DNA, it doesn't matter if that person is leaving because everyone owns a piece of it. We all have work that belongs to us relevant to this broad topic of equity and inclusion.
Yeah, Tanya Menon?
Yeah, I think I want to really lift that point up because I think when we talk about, okay, all of these people are leaving, what is really interesting when we look at the actual statistics is that 92% of Americans think it's important for companies to promote racial equity. And that number has actually increased since 2021. And so in 2021, it was 79%. So it's not that there's less interest in this since George Floyd.
Right.
Okay. And so Just Capital is the firm that tracks this. And so there's not less interest in it. And so I think this is part of the issue that I think it is our choices in framing these kinds of topics. And there's a difference between the human beings that are in organizations who are actually living it, what they actually believe, and what our politicians on both sides are saying and kind of polarizing people in these ways. I've had classes where we talk very deeply about issues of race. And every time after these discussions, my students tell me, and they are people from all sides of the political spectrum, that these conversations happened with so much thought, so much intelligence, and it is across the board of whatever their race is. And so I think that we are capable of doing this. We have to do it in the right way. And I love this point that Nika made, which is it is horizontal. You put somebody in a role and just say, you are that individual who's in charge of solving this whole huge problem. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work. It is something that has to be embedded in the organization. It is not one shot. It is something that is over time and with a strategy, with measurement. If it is not measured, it is not managed. And that is one of our basic principles of management.
And are you talking about a measurement like the ones they've established for women in the C-suite, for women on boards, when there are more women in corporate leadership, when there are more women in boardrooms? A company, it's a correlation, but they're also studying it now for causation, that it makes a difference.
Yeah.
So it makes a difference to the bottom line of the company.
So I also want to kind of follow up on one of Nika's points. Laura Morgan Roberts, a professor at Darden, what she has really emphasized is it's not just the bottom line, right? It is mm-hmm. something you okay. do as a human being. For your organization, for your values.
Okay.
And so that is a basic kind of thing. And it's actually, it makes people feel, you know, we're just doing this for the marketing or because it makes sense. And so I do think that kind of overall framework is something that's important. When I think about metrics, there's several different kinds of metrics. There's actual representation and do we have, you know, all this representation so that we can do this actual job, mm-hmm. right? And so we have customers who look in all different ways. We have people who we have to make connections, you know. So that representation is one kind of metric that's important. But then the other kind of metric is much softer, and it is as important, which is how do people feel? Do they feel included?
Yes.
And so those relationships that, and a lot of it is around it goes. I totally capture and appreciate the point that Nika made about race being front and center, but it affects the whole, whatever you are, whoever you are. There's a sense of psychological safety a human being has when they can bring their whole self to the organization, and it affects everybody. It affects our white males who go through these programs feeling shamed and blamed, and how can it be effective in that situation? Mm. It is, am I safe to bring myself, bring my issues? There are, in this process, it does benefit everybody, but there's people who are losing as well. And I think we do need to understand and appreciate that the roles that were held by some, we are thinking about others in those roles as well.
Yeah.
So I think it is a hard topic, and how do we have these conversations with care of and appreciating the complexity of it?
Yeah. Nika White, what are your thoughts about that, how we have these conversations?
Oh, I love a good reframe. And, you know, when I often talk about the work of equity and inclusion and belonging, you know, I really frame it as these are leadership skills, mm-hmm. leadership competencies, and not leadership by positionality or title necessarily. Yes, that's part of it, but not exclusively. Mm-hmm. You know, and I share that because mm-hmm. leadership in this context is more about influence. And we all can have influence no matter where we are within the organization. I think that's an important point to amplify. And I also want to just comment on the piece that Tanya mentioned about there are a lot of cis white men that are sensing that they're losing something, right, by this broaden conversation of DEI. And I feel like that's an opportunity for a reframe, because are they really losing something? Or do we need to now lean in more to the education of helping them to see how the values are creating opportunities for all? And I think that's an opportunity. The other thing that's coming up for me is when I think about data and the importance of data mm-hmm. and really informing the ways in which we decide what to put our priorities towards from a measurement perspective, we have to disaggregate that data. I find that many organizations, one of the biggest mistakes is that they'll do a survey and they're already maybe challenged by not having great representation across the organization. And so they'll look at the stats and the numbers and they believe that that's the full story. But once we disaggregate and we see that there's a different experience, people of color, people from the LGBTQ+ community or other marginalized communities are experiencing, it looks vastly different. And it's not just about measuring. I do believe in metrics. They're critically important. And, you know, the saying, what gets measured gets done, that's half true. It's what gets measured gets done, and where you hold people accountable, you can sustain it. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think there's such a significant opportunity for us.
Tanya Menon, as far as studying this and what and its effectiveness, bottom line, mm-hmm. You said equally important or very important is that soft impact, mm-hmm. how people feel about their company, mm-hmm. how they feel about the job they're doing, and how they feel about feeling good working at a company that cares about these kinds of values. How do you study that?
So one of the things that I think Nika was kind of going there with her point is really looking at the gaps. And so if you're sitting there looking at surveys, for example, one thing I'd like to know is, are there gaps between how, for example, men and women are experiencing it? Are African-American or getting better, even better into intersectionality? For example, African-American women or women who are, you know, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. And so really kind of looking in those surveys. But I'm not just a numbers person. One of the things I think is most important is actually getting to stories. And what I mean by stories is really hearing and validating people's experiences. So rather than giving me a whole pile of numbers, and I've sat through so many of these culture surveys where I've got a lot of numbers, I want to know, why do you feel that way? When did you feel this way? When were you not heard? When were you not validated? When did you feel there was something unfair? And so the surveys are really important, because what we're always asking people for, oh, give me a survey. But when they're actually coming up to us and telling us there are problems here, we don't want to hear it. We don't want to listen to them. And so it's those rich stories and that data that, and they'll be consistent, okay? So it's not idiosyncratic. There's tremendous consistency in people's experiences. And giving that validation, I think, is a really critical place to you know, the word DNA of the organization, to understand that culture. So one of the reasons why, you know, a basic intervention or somebody just coming in and doing a one-shot thing is not going to work is to understand the context of your company and how these interventions fit.
Tanya Menon, professor of human resource management in the Fisher College of Business at Ohio State, chair of OSU's Faculty Senate Diversity Committee. Thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it. And Nika White, author, entrepreneur, and founder of Nika White Consulting, a diversity, equity, and inclusion firm in Greenville, South Carolina. Also, her new book is titled Inclusion Uncomplicated, A Transformative Guide to Simplify DEI. Nika, thanks so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Ann.
And to the All Sides staff, senior producer Marcus Charleston, producer Aaron Esmont-Rabinowitz, intern producers Chantel Brown, Chris Corcoran, Ethan Miller, and Nicole Nowicki, with video production by The Ohio Channel, board operation by Chris Johnston. Alan DiCenzo is the composer of our theme music, WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson. That's it for now. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.